Hey folks, Sarah here from Manager Tools, just popping my head in quick to let y'all know that we're going to be visiting you today with a throwback podcast. While you're thinking about your executive journey over the course of the last few years and the years that you're looking toward, we often recommend that you do an activity that we call the Deliberate Executive Waypoint. So we are at part two today of this series of guidance. Please enjoy. As you're planning out 2026, remember, all of our conferences, the Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, Effective Hiring Manager, Effective Senior Manager, even the Effective Executive Conference, all of these are available not only as public offerings, but can be brought to you and your organization. You need us to make some changes to specialize it for your team? Of course we can customize the material. Ask us how. Send us a note to customer service at manager-tools.com to learn more.
And I would say, look, here's the preparation. It's about an hour a day for a week or so. Could be 2 weeks, depends on how you want to do it. And once I look at this, some people will say, oh, I could do that in blank. For me, it was an hour a day for closer to like seven business days.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. The first thing you want to do is, and we talked about this a little bit, is have some key conversations and just assume you're taking notes here, okay? Because it's important to take notes because you're going to reread them, you're going to go through them, you're going to annotate them, and you're going to use them to create insights. So for goodness sakes, take some notes, okay?
Good. Okay.
First of all, you should get the concerns and the needs of the people in the company leadership and the board, depending on where you are in the company. Now, I would submit, Mark, that most executives already know this stuff, right?
Okay.
You should pretty much know where everyone above you is kind of thinking, right? I know my head of sales really wants me to roll out that lead management system we haven't rolled out, right? And that's his job one, and he's on me about it, right? The head of product development, she really wants me to get that feedback process on the products, right? But I would say that if you don't have an updated view of what the CEO really has top of mind and things like that, for goodness sakes, have the conversations, ask the questions, and write it down.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Make sense?
All right. Yeah.
Okay, that's an easy one.
We're starting internal in the company, people above you, the people who drive your work, but also set the course for the organization. Okay.
I would have a conversation with my boss and I would ask her about my blind spots. Okay. And the way I do this, and Mark, what happens when you go to your boss, a busy boss, and say, can I have some feedback on my performance?
Oh my God. You're not suggesting you ask that.
No,
yeah, that's a joke, right? Yeah. Because literally you can't do that.
No, you can't.
No.
No. Because you get go away or, you know what? You're doing great.
You're doing great.
Everything's fine.
You're fine.
Which could mean anything.
You know, exactly. And you know how you'll know if it's not fine, I'll tell you, right?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you that day when HR is in the room with us.
it's dark.
I would say.
Didn't you have somebody say you were getting cynical? I'm kidding.
Not me, Mark. You know me better. Dan. So I would go to her and I would say, hey, look, I really want to talk to you about blind spots. I'm going to do this little process. I'm kind of thinking about my own goals. I'm going to throw some time in your calendar for Wednesday. Can you do some thinking between now and then? I really am interested in what you think about things I should be working on.
Right.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the way I do it. I would do it with my
And how many out of 100, dude, how many out of 100 mid-level managers, junior executives ever do that with their boss? I have a number.
Not too many. I'd say single digit.
Really, I would say a single digit. 1 out of 100. I'm not kidding. I just don't believe that 1 out of 100. Yeah.
So it took me a while before I did it, you know?
And
then the other thing is if you have a mentor or somebody in the company that kind of has guided you and things like that, add them to the list.
Sure. Okay. Right. Yeah. Good. Suppose you supported the trading floor. I'm using an example from Wall Street. That was 50% of your internal customer. You talk to your boss. Let's say your boss is the CTO. You talk to your mentor, who's the COO, let's say, for the a particular division.
Okay.
Would you talk to your internal customer who's super powerful, who you're really kind of two levels below?
I would.
Let's say a guy or gal who's in line to be CEO in 5 years, maybe?
Yeah, I would go wrong on the side of over-inclusion.
Yeah, good.
But okay. I would be a little careful about the conversation that it's not, if you rub this lamp, you get three wishes. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree.
So,
yeah.
You know, I would say, look, I'm doing some planning for myself. Tell me what I can, not, you know, what can I build for you in the next year?
You got to be careful about if you ask somebody a couple levels up, they'll say, I'll tell you what I want you to do. Do the thing you said you'd do 6 months ago. Exactly. That's all I need. I'll tell you what your blind spot is. Me.
Exactly. And I'm about to give you another
blind product. Spot. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Good. Now, you also mentioned Francine. I assume loved ones are in here as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously probably the most important conversation you're going to have is how are we doing together here? You know, particularly if, you know, you're an executive, you know, whether your spouse also works or doesn't, you're making sacrifices for one another and you're asking for things from one another every single day. And particularly if busyness is starting to take over, you know, my quote unquote, my job performance as a dad was slipping a little bit. And she said, hey, Dan, you think you're there, but you know, the BlackBerry is out, don't do that.
So
I would absolutely add loved ones to this. You know, it was really a conversation with, you know, people in my family that made me kind of take things offline for a while for my parents and things like that. So yes, this is an important conversation.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And Mark, why are you doing it? You know, we're doing one-on-ones, right? We're manager tools managers.
Right.
Add a conversation with your directs in that says, hey, what's working for you here? And what are some things, you know, if we had a chance, what are some things you'd like to do more of? And, you know, I'm looking at the organization going forward. Do you have any suggestions for me? Anything like that? Just take those notes.
Right.
Okay. And you know, you're taking notes at your meetings anyway, right?
Right.
Just, you know, just cut out a little piece of your one-on-one notes that week and pile them up.
Now your wife, Francine, I know her well. She's a lawyer, very accomplished. You know, you don't approach your spouse the same way you do your boss or whatever, but, but answer the question that's probably tickling the back of some of our audience mind right now, which is how did she respond? Was she appreciative that you were sharpening the saw, so to speak, to call it Stephen Covey phrase? Did she kid you? Did you have a role with it? How did she respond?
Well, first of all, she was absolutely fine with it. Okay. She was supportive. She was glad that we were having the conversation and that I asked about it. She was glad that I was reassessing things that were going on. But, you know, we talk about, we kind of have a partnership where I talk about work at home. I'll say, wow, I have this situation that's going on. Unless it's like super, super, super confidential or something like that.
Well, yeah.
But in general, you know, she's always been, you know, she's on my board of directors, right? And so she's helped me.
She's the chairman.
She's the chairperson. Exactly. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, she helps me make decisions. And sometimes she helps me more than other times. But she certainly, there was humor involved. I mean, she gave me a hard time. Like, wait, you just woke up, you know, like, you know. But she was great. I mean, it's something that it wasn't a conversation that came out of the blue, Mark, for us. It's something that we kick around, you know, a couple of times a month.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about the business and where I'm taking it. What do you think about this? Do you think I'm doing this? And I can't tell you how many, Francine probably saved my job 14 times by saying, you're not going to send that email tonight.
Don't do that. Yeah. Yeah. Don't do that.
You might want to wait till the morning before you respond to that. Okay.
Love it.
So that, you know, Francine.
Okay. All right. So you've gotten some conversations, you've taken some notes, and now you're going to reflect on it.
Yeah.
This is interesting. I think this would be my weak spot. The reflection in the notes. I think I'd have a natural little bit of defensiveness there that would cause me to do what I find fault in with other people, which is when my wife or my boss were to say, well, I'd like more of X versus Y, I'd say, well, there's a good reason why I'm doing X or Y. I really do have, it's not like I just stumbled into this. I'd have to really steel myself for a real self analysis and be truly self-critical without being flagellating.
It's like the times where I've destroyed brainstorming sessions by immediately countering somebody's idea.
Oh. Yeah, that won't work. We tried that 13 years ago before you were born. That doesn't work. Yeah.
So I like to take this stuff and I go through it again and I annotate it basically as my reflection.
Yeah.
But then I think about things like, you know, the stuff that's more out of, you know, how will you measure your life or the road to character or, you know, books like that.
Oh, you know, Clayton Christensen's really, really good.
Yeah. Where am I in the world right now? And what do I want to be doing? I mean, it's a little, I don't know, kind of heavy, but but certainly if there's a time to think about it, you're about to make some big changes. This is a good time to think about it.
Right. Yeah.
And who do you need to be for your family? And who do you need to be for your team? And are you being that person? And sometimes there were times when, you know, we were going through a merger and I'm doing this process. And I was like, you know, I've been a little bit more open with my feelings than I should be with my team and open with my stress. And it's been this part of the thinking has made me say, you know what? Let me just write down some things here that I might want to change about that. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can, because
sometimes when the wind's blowing hard, you turn toward the wind.
Yeah.
And as an executive, it's not really the right thing to do, if that makes sense.
No, it's not the right thing to do. Yeah. In fact, the part where you say, you know, who do you need to be and who do you want to be? My experience has been over and over and over again is that people say, okay, I can make a 5% change, but I can't be somebody completely different.
Of course.
And my experience actually is that you can be anybody you want. You absolutely can. Wow. You really can. A manager who's completely reactive and has gotten promoted because he or she had a great idea and maybe they're feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm underwater. They could transform their professional life in a week. They don't see the path. They can't see to the other side. They can't see the sunlit uplands of the future. But it absolutely can be done. And I would argue, the reason I'm saying that is because I would argue that you have to do something like this and go pretty deep to actually go, you know, if I change this and I change this, then this wouldn't be happening and that wouldn't be happening. And I'd get some knock-on effects, what I call Tetris effects, where you drop one of those long skinny ones right into the hole in between and like four layers go away, just chunk, 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 chunk. Yeah. To me, that's what I would be excited about with this. Not that the changes I made would be good or bad. I assume they'd be good, but rather the Tetris effects that because I do these other things, I don't have time to do the stuff that was perhaps self-destructive.
Yeah. And you know, I don't like to kiss your butt, Mark, but one of the things that you said to me that really, you said to me probably in 2006, maybe you buried it in a podcast, maybe it was an in-person conversation that helped me all the way in 2014 when there was a regime change at my company.
Right.
And I was on the not favorable side of a large regime change was, I think you used the term, change the line on the bottom of your face, right? Which is, and I went in there every single day. People would, I could see them reading my face because they knew that it was going to have an impact. And they're like, how you doing with all this? I'm like, good.
Good.
Good. Yeah. It's changed, good. Man. I think, you know, we have some good people coming in here and I think it's looking good. And, you know, that goes to the point of you can change your behavior in a significant way. And that made a big difference for me in every way, including what happened to me after the regime change, which turned out to be super positive.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was because I didn't push back.
You're ahead of it. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I would tell you, I think there are a healthy number of people. I think they're more rare among executives, but they don't understand that you can behave your way into believing. You can behave your way into feeling. And everybody thinks, well, I don't feel that way, so therefore I can't behave that way. And I'm saying, I got to tell you, you're taking one of the tools out of your bag. And that is, I know I need to behave that way, but I don't feel that way. I've got a knowing feeling gap. And so therefore, because I need to feel that way, I'm not going to do it. Well, you can actually do it. And people say, well, I'm not being authentic. Actually, you are, if in fact your role is to do this thing and it's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
And then suddenly a week or two later, you'll discover, I'm actually okay with that. Yeah. I suddenly realize I'm used to it. I'm planning for it. And that's how some of this stuff happens.
And as an executive, and this is, you know, and some of this thinking, look, we made space for this thinking here, just in the preparation process.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
Because when I'm an executive, it's not about me. You know, if I'm having a bad day and I'm walking in a room full of junior people to have a conversation, some new employees or something like that, my head is up.
Up.
Right? How are you guys doing?
Yeah.
What is going on with you?
Yeah.
Look at you guys.
Yeah.
Good morning. Say it louder. Good morning. Let me hear you. Right?
Yeah.
And you don't feel, you may not feel like doing that, but I guarantee you, Mark, by the end of that session, you feel better.
Well, think about your town halls. You did a bunch of town halls, right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember telling, you said, hey, I need to know how to do town halls. I said, okay, well, you do this. And he's like, yeah, okay, good. That was what I was thinking. You did a bunch of them, as I remember. You had hundreds of people in the room, as I recall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I can't imagine you getting up there and sort of stumbling around and looking at your note cards or, I mean, right? It was a choice you made about, okay, I may not be feeling that, but here's what I need to do in my role in order to be effective.
Exactly.
And then suddenly, I know a lot of people who I've coached over the course of my career who say, I knew what I had to be, how I had to behave, and I started behaving that way. And then suddenly I realized I wasn't thinking about behaving that way anymore. It wasn't, I had to think to do it, like crossing your arms the wrong way. They just figured out, I'm doing it.
Right.
And it's a good feeling. It's funny how people equate the role of executive with somebody that they're not. They may desire to be, but they somehow there's a gap between what that person is and who they are. And I can assure you folks, having worked with a lot of executives, any one of you listening could be a very effective executive.
Absolutely.
It's all about behavior.
It's all about behavior. You got to just be aware of the shadow you're casting there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
So this is, we're kind of coming to the end of like the note-taking prep. I want you to take maybe, you know, this is where you take an index card and when I did those I will statements, I will make time for my family. I will make time for strategy. You know, I will work on the positivity of the team. Do a few of those right at this point. You know, even early on, where you've just basically taken all the notes from all your conversations, and what are some things that you would like to see yourself doing in the target state?
Okay.
After you, right? So have that right down.
I thought we were going to have this in the rerouting thing, but you're actually suggesting before we go to the rerouting,
I am
let's
saying
at least
right off the
let's
top,
move in that direction.
Write it down, put it on an index card, put it in your folder, and move on.
Okay.
Okay. Now, let's talk about.
Are you thinking? I'm sorry, there are some high C's in our audience. Are you thinking 100 cards before we go to rerouting, or 5 or 6?
What on those I will statements?
Yeah, the I will statements. Yeah,
one. If it does, if they fit on, if they are too many for one index card, you've done it wrong because you're not going to change all that many things.
Okay,
at
good.
Least,
that's
at least
good.
I know I'm not right.
Right.
So you know, it's
not
two,
everybody knows that. So
two,
that's good.
Three, four, five, something like that. Right. Just
Okay.
A description of what the future state looks like. Makes sense?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And by the way, I happen to like 3x5 cards because I probably work with 50 executives over the course of my career who used to carry 3x5 cards around with their key priorities on them in their shirt pocket.
Yeah.
And people were like, really? I said, yeah, the guy runs a $17 billion business and he writes it down on the index card. And he says, and every time he's going to give a speech, he reminds himself or she reminds herself what the three things she's going to say from an index card. Where's my speech card? She would say to me, where's my speech card? Where's my priorities card? Where's my people card? So, and you don't need it on your phone. And by the way, probably not good on your phone actually, but anyway, okay, good. So we've reflected, we've maybe got a couple of these core imperatives, these I will statements, but now we're going to rerouting, right?
Now, we're going to do a few more things. We're going to do.
Oh, okay.
First, we're going to do a little bit of logistics here. Okay.
Okay.
And let's book the time and the place for our rerouting session.
Okay. Got it. Fair. Okay.
So quiet time, uninterrupted. And look.
So I can't do this in my own home in the holidays if I've got spouse and kids.
I would say no, because you won't be a very nice person to them.
But I wouldn't be uninterrupted either.
No,
I mean, that's, you wouldn't. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
You know, when you think of solitude, right, it's a state of mind in which you're isolated from the input of other minds.
Okay.
Okay. And that's, you know, that's right at the book, you know, books like Lead Yourself First, the West Point Lecture, you know, those sorts of things, right?
Right.
All about solitude. And if you are leading people, you need to separate your mind from the gravity pull of other minds periodically.
Yeah. So you're not suggesting that on one Friday when, you know, everybody's got to go at 5 o'clock because it's Christmas, you're not suggesting that I stay in the office at my desk on a Friday evening, even if everybody's gone? Probably less effective.
I think it is, Mark, because I think just from an energy perspective.
Right, exactly. You're going to see all those people in your head all the time.
Yeah, you're going to be doing first of all, you're coming right off a bunch of conversations, right? And that stuff's going to pop back into your head no matter what. And you're going to be doing some system two thinking. This stuff is hard.
Yeah.
Especially if you're super busy, right? Yeah. So separate yourself from the office. I used to go into the office when nobody was there. I talked about that. Nice big table is a great room to book. If you have, you know, it could be your dining room if nobody's home. Whiteboard's nice to have, lots of notepads. But indispensable is a boatload of Post-it notes.
Okay. Post-it notes are your weapon of choice.
They're my weapon of choice. I'm not advertising 3M, right? But I do think that they help me envision what's going on. You could do the same thing with index cards, but you may be a small wind away from setting yourself back.
Oh, a small wind. I love that. Yeah. Okay.
So I would say I like Post-it notes and whatever else allows you to focus. For me, Mark, I think until it hurts and then I pace or I walk. I go out for a walk.
Yeah. I'll tell you, cigars do it for me.
I got to have at least a pot of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If it's morning. Yeah.
So,
yeah, solid.
Okay. So, you know, that sort of thing. So book it, just book it. Okay.
Right.
So that's it. Very simple. And before you go, I just want you to do a little bit of scavenger hunt and put a few more things in your folder. Okay.
Okay.
First of all the notes you took, don't forget them.
Right. Okay.
If you have your organization's objectives, a lot of companies do this goals cascade thing, Mark.
Sure.
Right. It starts at the top. Right.
Yeah.
By all means.
Manager by objective.
By all means, bring that stuff.
KPIs. Yeah.
Right? You bring that stuff. Bring your objectives, your own personal objectives, your organization's objectives. You have a company strategy statement. You're an executive. You got to have that with you.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Also, if there's any key documents about the marketplace, sometimes you get strategy. Like I used to always get research strategy about where wealth management was going and things like that.
Right.
So I would always circle those articles, circle things. And I would throw those in the folder for sure.
Okay.
You want to
be fully marinated in the ecosystem that your organization swims in.
Here you go. Four aspects. You want to be fully marinated, personal.
Right.
Professional. Organizational.
Yeah.
And company and industry. Because you want to look across the entire topography.
Yeah.
If you're changing course, and think about those things, right, Mark, right? Personal, professional, right? Organizational,
right.
And company. They're interdependent, especially if you're an executive.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think you change any one of those four without having an effect on, by definition, all the other three. You can get away with changing things if you're a manager, but not if you're an executive.
Right. And this is where I have the conversation with people that I've worked with in the past. They're like, oh, wait, I reset goals every year anyway. I'm like, yeah, they're the goals that get cascaded. Well, I add a few more. I said, are you looking across all these four? They're like, well, no. It's you know, my work life is separate from the other things that I'm doing. And then, you know, I give them a few examples like, oh, well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
If you have a 360 mark, it's a great thing to bring.
Okay, good.
Or any performance review. This is the one I love the most. I print out org charts.
I love org charts.
Right?
I love them.
I can't look at an org chart without immediately thinking of a million things I want to do.
Okay.
Right? So org charts.
Yeah.
Above, side to side, below.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
A list of key relationships. And this is something that I usually build. And sometimes I use Excel. Sometimes I just use a notepad. I do name the role to me, like my biggest customer.
Right. Okay.
Head of finance, you know, colleague in infrastructure, you know, I'll just put down. And then I usually do like a red, amber, green. Like red is, I really need to spend more time with this person.
Right.
All right. You know, and you can kind of go from there for amber and green.
Right.
And then one of the other things I will add to that usually is what do they need me to be?
Yeah, from their perspective.
From their
perspective. I wish more people would get out of their own head.
Right.
Yeah.
To really build relationships, you look at it from, this is a Clayton Christensen thing, right? You look at it from the job you need to do for that relationship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll have this little list of relationships I'll do. Honestly, Mark, if you're spending more than 15 minutes on it, you're probably down to like fourth level too far.
Okay.
Roles and responsibilities in your organization, here's how I do this. I take my job description and then I parse it on how I assigned it out to the people who report to me. Because let's face it, that's really what you're doing. You're delegating your job description to other people.
Right. Got it.
And I like to bring that.
Okay.
While you're looking at your directs, you have 9 boxes or succession plans for them?
Yeah, it's funny. You say 9 box. I know what you mean, but there's thousands of people who are listening who don't. So it's a performance versus potential graph, right? With what looks like tic-tac-toe with square rounded.
It does. Performance versus potential.
Is on the X and potential on the Y. And somebody who's in the top right is your top performer and still has more to give.
Right.
Somebody who's in the bottom right is a great performer, but probably doesn't have a lot of potential. They're just in their role and they're going to stay there. The people you worry about are the low performers, low potential.
The low lows. Those
lottery winners. Right? We wish they'd win the lottery and leave.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. So, and also succession plans. If you haven't done any succession development or succession planning, that's something, you know, you're going to need to think about. Just have access to your calendar. And then don't forget your little card with your I will statements. And that's it.
Yeah, I will statements.
So you get a fat little folder here coming into your full day session. But now you're ready to go.
Yeah. Wow. I just tell you, this is... But to me, it all coheres. It all hangs together. It all feels like that's why I'm so excited to do it.
Yeah. And it seems like a lot, but remember the four axes, right? Your personal, professional, organizational, and your company. You really have to pull across the entire battlefield, you know? And I think it's important that you look at all the aspects of it. If you're making big change, you're going to impact all those things. So that's why over time, and this is something that I developed over time, because I realized I was leaving things out. And the last thing was I was neglecting, you know, when I got to a senior executive, I was neglecting the industry stuff and my company strategy and things like that. And I realized, you know what, Dan?
Right.
You're missing it. And believe me, my boss told me about that, you know.
Yeah. You could probably get away without industry and company stuff if you're a frontline manager, but you can as an executive. You just can't do it.
No. Yeah, I couldn't. And I was told that.
So what have we done thus far? Well, if you guys remember, Dan told us a great story about a lesson that he learned, the origin story of the executive waypoint. And then he talked, step one was determining how to do it. And step two was preparation. And now really we're getting to step three, the core process and a new course. And the last step is to actually act. And I know Dan has some strong feelings about that because there's a lot of us. Okay, I say us. I meant that in a nice way. It's not me. I'm actually short on deliberation and long on let's go because I'm a high D, high I. But a lot of us have a tendency to prepare all this stuff and then spend some time thinking about it and mulling it over. And I got to tell you, folks, if you're an executive and you spend some time thinking about it and you don't pull the trigger, you're not going to be an executive for very long. It doesn't work. Time is your greatest resource and your worst enemy. Time flies by when you're an executive. And as Dan was talking during his original origin story, how he first did this, he talked about doing this over the Christmas holidays. And then, Dan, you implemented the first week you were back, right?
Oh, right away. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, you actually said your people noticed, like, wow, you're like on fire. We're doing this and we're doing that and so on.
Indeed.
And if you had waited until everybody else had gotten over their post-holiday, you know, hangovers, then they would have been busy too. But you just basically took the bull by the horns, took the reins, and right. Yeah.
I was that guy. Yeah. Ruined everybody's post-holiday swoon.
Yeah, no, we got stuff to do. Well, here's the thing. If you're not ruining everybody's post-holiday swoon, one of your competitors is.
Indeed.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So we're on point four, which is the core waypoint process, which is rerouting. I want to just make one other point before we begin. You guys know me well enough. If you've been listening for 15 years, you know I do this, a brief tangent. And that is, you're going to go through this and you're going to prepare and you're going to say that this is really great. I want you to remember something in your career as you're an executive. Dan had this insight on his own. This didn't come from a book. It didn't come from a class. It didn't come from manager tools. Dan did this on his own. And it's now a key part of his consulting firm, Arcturus Advisory Services. And you're going to have these same sort of things. One of the things in Horseman's Laws, I say, is that Horseman's Laws represents a lifetime of learning distilled down into a few key points. And I say right after that, what are your laws? What are your learnings? And you've got to be willing as an executive, if you want to make your organization better, you got to do what Dan did, which is to say, hey, I'm onto something here. I'm going to capture it. I'm going to think about it holistically a little bit, and I'm going to learn how to teach it to other people. Now, you may not be on a podcast that goes out to hundreds of thousands of people, but you've got to be able to teach your managers how to do this stuff when you have your own insights. You don't assume that all knowledge in the world is outside of you, because it's not. It's inside of you, and your experiences will call it out of you. So again, Dan, I'll just say thanks. It's a treat to do this with you, and because we're longtime friends, but it's really cool to see the Manager Tools community benefiting from another Manager Tools community member, you, as an executive, and telling them, this is available to you. It's worked for me for years. I've coached executives using this technique and it works.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
I'm excited to share it. And I'm really excited because we're at the best part of this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Everything else has been like leading up to this. I was disappointed we had to stop last time.
Yeah. So you pulled together you had all these conversations, you pulled together all this material. All right. And this is the core waypoint process. This is the one-day session we asked you to set things aside for, mm-hmm. right? This is your rerouting. After this, you're on a different course by the end of this day, actually.
You know, I was going to ask you, why do you call it rerouting? Well, you're saying this is the moment where you've hit the waypoint and you're turning.
This is it. At the beginning of this day, you're going one way. At the end of this day, you've determined the new course.
Yeah.
Okay. And then once you act, you're moving there.
Yeah.
I love that.
Okay.
So
go.
Go. It's a little hard for me, right? Because this is the part where I walk around and it's a podcast and you can't do that.
You can't really walk around. We don't have headsets that your microphone.
All right. I'm really excited about, right?
Yeah.
So,
Because that's what you did in you talked about this. You laid out on your conference table.
Exactly.
And you'd walk around and look at all this stuff visually.
So now I'm in my big empty conference room. I have my binder full of stuff or probably a folder full of documents and notes that I took. And I had to be ready for a day of system two or deep thinking, right? You have to be mentally ready for this. So a few things. One, try to be as well rested as you can. I know you're an executive, so that's, you know, it's all relative,
weak.
Right?
Yeah.
It's weak. So, and the second thing is, one time I did an early morning conference call the day before I did this, big mistake. Put me in the wrong mindset to do it. Probably took me 2 hours to downshift from the conference call. Reserve a day. Okay.
Okay.
Reserve. No,
in other words, nothing before.
Yeah, I don't think right, so. Yeah. Breakfast. That's about it.
Right? Yeah. Okay. Good.
So.
Right. And again, you make the point that you never did this at home.
I did it home the first time.
The first time.
Francine took the kids out.
Oh, okay.
And I had the dining room table. Okay. After that, it was always sneak in and find an empty conference room, usually at a dead time. Okay. So we're going to work in two areas today. First thing we're going to do is we're going to take all of our materials and we're going to generate a bunch of insights and refine them. Okay.
Right.
That's basically what are my takeaways from these things. We're going to list them. We're going to put them down. I'm going to explain how to do that.
So when you talk about all these insights, what you're going to do is ask, you're going to put all your data together, start asking yourself questions about them, and your answers are going to be insights. And it worries me a little bit. I think there are people sitting out there going, I don't think of myself as a terribly insightful person. I don't. Other people might tell me that, but I don't think of that. I'm a little bit worried that I'm going to stare at all this stuff and I'm going to go, I don't know.
Not to worry. This is going to flow.
Okay. Oh, look at guys, by the way, we're on a Zoom call here, so I can see Dan, which is usually not true when Mike and I record. We just do Skype without video. So I wish I had a picture of Dan's facial expression there when he said flow.
Okay. And the second thing you're gonna do is we're gonna distill all that stuff into a couple of big decisions, and that's our course change. All right.
Okay.
So why don't we roll right into the insights part, Mark?
Okay, good. Okay. Yeah, sure.
So generating insights, like I said, is not the hard part. You're going to be amazed at the flow. You might even have to time box yourself here.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example of what this means. First of all, it involves Post-it notes.
Okay.
And lots of them. And let me give you an example. Let's say I pulled one of the things I pull out of my folder from my prep materials is my last performance review. And I start going through, what do I mean by insights?
Okay.
It says, Dan, you need to spend more time with your largest customer. Bang, yeah, that's an insight.
That's an insight. That's literally I haven't been doing that, and now I need to do that.
Exactly.
And it came from my boss, so it's got special.
Came from my boss, exactly. You need to develop a better relationship with Fred from finance because it's not working. Bang, that's an insight.
Right.
Okay?
Now, let's be clear. You're lucky in that you had those kinds of comments on your performance review. A lot of performance reviews are pablum. They're just vague nostrums of nothingness.
Yeah.
And so it's possible you'll get a performance review, guys, and you'll look at it and go, I didn't get the kind of stuff Dan got. That's okay.
It's true.
That's okay. But you have to look at your performance review is what you're saying.
Yeah. The performance review is one of the key parts of whatever you're going to bring, right?
Yeah.
You may have some things that on the major side, the other side of the ledger, some things you want to remind yourself you need to keep doing. Like I walk around a lot. I stay in touch with every individual in the organization. I want to keep doing that. Okay,
right.
That could be an insight as well. So you'll grab a couple from there, and then you go to the next document. And let's say I pull off the org chart of the organization.
Okay? I love this part.
And you know, an org chart to me, I mean, my mind just explodes. Mark, if I handed you an org chart of an organization you're familiar with, what are some of the things that you start to think about?
All right. So first of all, the first thing I think about is the standard mistake that managers have that the org chart is received from God and it's a perfect chart that is an accurate representation of what should be. In fact, org charts are not built that way. They're built in static and then they gradually metastasize based on every individual choice that's made. And every individual choice is a trade-off about where a person should be and who he or she should report to and so on. And they're essentially what is known as satisficing. It's not optimizing, it's satisficing. We're going to put him in there. We understand it's not perfect, but there's no perfect anywhere in the org chart. The problem is you end up with a whole, when you look at it in total, it's a mess. And nobody intended it to be for a mess, but you made all these choices that were 70% effective or 55% effective. You multiply that by 500 and you literally have a mess. You've got one manager with 18 employees who's actually not that good a manager. You've got your best manager whose people love her, who's got four. You've got one guy working for a guy who has 15 direct reports who could easily be a number two, but he's never been given because the guy's such a bad manager, he hasn't given him additional responsibility.
Okay.
You've got a guy who's got experience in two areas. He's working in one that used to be important, but is now less so. And his other skill is in an area of real importance, but he doesn't work in that area. And he talks to them a lot and he offers to help, but he works in the wrong area. You could almost go through and block by block, go, yeah, I could do this. I could do this. I could do this. And I would think the key for me, as I looked at that, I'd have to go, whoa, time out. Because I don't want to do necessarily a full reorg. I don't want to throw all the blocks up in the air and come back down. It could be. Yeah. But I know what I start looking at is all my key people. And I'm going to find out whether or not the people around them are organized to help that key person be effective.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So if you were just speaking there and I was throwing insights down on the table, it would be like the old SNL skit, like cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Because
you
talked about, you know, people with too large a span of control, people struggling in their role, somebody who's your top manager who has more capacity. You talked about number twos that could do more.
Yeah.
You talked about imbalances.
Yeah. Imbalances.
Okay. Yeah. Each one of these is an insight that I would throw on the table. And then you already have me, and you have me juggling all my other documents, because I would reach over and grab my roles and responsibilities and say,
yeah,
let me look at the roles and responsibilities of the team with four versus the team with 11.
Yeah.
Maybe I can change that.
Yeah.
Also, we have succession plans here. Oh my goodness.
Oh.
Who's got a real backup? Who doesn't? You know, there's Bill on my accounting technology team who's been there for 20 years. With three high potential people who have been working for him for 18 years.
Okay. Oh my
God. So maybe.
And they're after 18 years, they are assuming that nothing will ever happen to them. I mean, but even if it's 9 years or 6 years, if this guy's not a good boss, he was really good. He was the right guy to put in charge.
Yeah.
But he didn't ever develop into a people developer. And it's an area that's of some importance to us. Right. And everybody just looks and goes, well, that's the way it is. And I would argue something else. Here's what's great about you mentioning org charts, Dan. Most managers believe their org chart is out of their control. First of all, they're wrong. They have a great deal more ability than they think they do. Although their boss above them might be a jerk and say, no, you can't do that. It has to get HR's approval. You do not need HR's approval, folks. You do not. You have much more purview than you realize. But surely, Dan, you can reassure us that when you become an executive, you actually do have the purview. And you could say, yeah, I'm going to rearrange this. I'm going to do this. And I don't need four people's approval. I don't need budget authority. I don't need an offsite to announce it and all that sort of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
I just need to say, hey, you four, you're now moving over to her. These six, they're going over there, period. Yeah.
And there's a way to roll that out from a communication perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you not only do you have the ability to do it, you have to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to keep the organization in a state where it's continually optimized without churning.
Yeah. Right? And if you become an executive and you didn't know that, you will carry your misperception that you had, you learned as a manager, which is the org chart is not mine. It's the org's.
Right.
And then you will essentially accept a static organization, and you'll see other people doing stuff and saying, how did she get to rearrange things in a way that was good? You're like, and you go over and you become friends with her. And she says, well, I just did it.
Yeah.
Did you get in trouble? No, nobody seemed to care. And you're like, well, maybe I could do it. And now another year's gone by.
Yeah, sure. And I would go a step further, Mark. I'm not only talking about the org chart that may report to me. I may look at a function that I have and say, I need to talk to a colleague. She should have this, not me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Because if she does that, that frees my organization up to do these new things. And, you know, we would be taking that to our executive leader, whoever that is, could be the CEO, and saying, you know what? We think it makes more sense to organize this way.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the type of thinking you can do.
And you get to that level of executive, those people are not micromanaging their 500 or 1,000 person organization. They're not. They're like, fine, do it. I don't care.
Right. Exactly.
Get out of my office is what they're going to say.
Exactly.
There's a great story. I may have told it last time we recorded. There's a great story about org charts and about authority. Eisenhower is president after World War II, and he's got a guy running defense, not the War Department. And he decides that he wants to put the Marine Corps inside the Navy Department. And so he writes a note, handwritten note to Eisenhower saying, I'd like to move the Marine Corps into the Navy. Just want to make sure you're okay with this. Ike wrote back, I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm busy running the country. Why don't you run the Department of Defense for me like I ask you to? Right? So, you know, you actually have that authority as managers, but it'll become manifest when you're an executive. And you maybe need to brief somebody, but it might, if you work for me, if I have a 5,000 person organization and you've got 1,000 people working for you and you report to me, all I need is an email saying, hey, by the way, boss, I moved some folks around. I'm like, yeah, delete. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. That's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. So you can see how just the org chart and then the related documents to the org chart, which are how the roles and responsibilities are divided.
Yeah.
The conversations you had with your directs coming into this room is related to the org chart. Okay. Your list of relationships that you have that you're looking to invest in. You know, those are all things that are related.
Succession
plan is the other one. Right. Exactly.
I'll tell you something else about succession plan. They can't see you, but you turned as if you were grabbing some succession plans off of your living room table or your conference room table. But look, folks, if you don't have succession plans, that's got to be one of your insights. You got to have that at the table. If you're doing org charts, if you're thinking about a reorg and you're part of the organization, not going to lay anybody off or anything, but if you're thinking about right-sizing, you know, optimizing your organization, at least for the next year, you got to have succession plans in there. You got to know who's good and who's not and what they're thinking and so on. And by the way, that's not that hard. You just tell all your managers, I want succession plans. Here's a format. Here's a template.
Right.
Do it. Speaking of which, we probably need to share a good template for succession plans. So.
It's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
And you know, Mark, one of the things that really that bothers me is I've run into executives that are like, oh man, I have this succession planning exercise I have to do. Look, if you're an executive, chances are, if you're any good, you're being asked for more and more and more of your time. Okay.
Yep.
If you don't have an idea of succession in your organization, you are going to run into trouble when you look to delegate whole ownership for some of the things that you do. So, so it's not a burden to do one. It's an absolute necessity.
It's
your responsibility.
Yeah. And then once you get the first one done and you've got a rough idea, then you know, maybe twice a year you get together with your people and say, okay, you need to update those. How are we doing on those? And who's on track and who's not? Who's ready now? Who's ready next?
Yeah.
It's not hard. And it's part of an offsite.
And you start to see who's creating leaders in your organization and who isn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. Because those are the ones. If you're not creating leaders, you ain't going anywhere. You're not moving up. You might get to be a director. You might even get to be a senior director. Anything above that, you ain't going anywhere if you're not creating leaders.
Right.
I don't know why people seem to fear creating leaders. If Dan McGuire works for me, I want to promote him twice. Because first of all, if he becomes my peer, he owes me. Because I'm the one that made him my peer. Actually, my boss did, but he knows that I put him in place to do it. If he gets promoted again, I shouldn't feel bad that now a guy who used to work for me, I now work for. Because guess what? I'm the guy who got him the promotion to be my peer. I will always be first among equals among the guys who report to Dan. If Dan gets promoted again, I will still always be the guy who gave him the first promotion. I will always have I'm sorry to say it this way. My snout will always be in the trough first. This is what creating leaders is. And people are like, well, I don't know. It's a race. If I promote Dan, then maybe he's better than me and maybe I lose out. No. You got to think about the organization, guys. And when I promote Dan, he drags me right up the org chart with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to look at a good measure of success. How many leaders you created. No matter whether in your company, other companies, anything. It's a great pleasure.
Right. That's it for part two of Executive Tools Executive Waypoint. Come back. See you soon for part three.